I'm sure that public will continue to filter in, but the governor is here and all the board is here.
Okay.
I don't tell my agent. I just have.
All right. Is the recording system up and running?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Hubert. And Kathy, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. We'll call the meeting to order, and it is my great pleasure to introduce a very special guest today that is here to give honor to the three commissioners, Barbara Lowe, Bob Burns, and Bill Orister, for their fine service over these last two terms. And so it's very much my great pleasure to introduce the governor of our fine state, Governor Dave Heineman. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. And thank you very much for allowing me this opportunity. And first of all, let me say that I'm very proud of what you do. This is a very, very important board, and the work you do is very, very meaningful. And the reason I'm here today is three of your really charter board members are going to retire, given the way the system works, Barbara, Bob, and Bill. And they've just done extraordinary work. And I can tell you the state is very, very proud of them. So today, I'm very pleased that I can promote him to be an admiral in the great Navy.
Congratulations.
Bob?
I've always been.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I really have.
Bill? Congratulations.
Thank you.
You make sure that now, he calls you admiral.
That's right. Now that we have three more admirals in our great Navy, if you don't have anything else to do, you can call the adjutant general up, and you now outrank the adjutant general. But again, to each of these three distinguished Nebraskans, we just want to say thank you for your years of service. It makes a difference, and I want you to know it doesn't go unnoticed by the governor's office. It doesn't go unnoticed by the people of Nebraska, and especially this community. And so I appreciate the opportunity to be here, Madam Chair. Thank you for allowing me to do this. And be careful today, because you're three people who now outrank you. Thank you very much. We pledge to continue the fine work as best we can, don't we, Daryl?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
And I would also like to present each of the commissioners and the governor with our cup out on the seas. Admirals, you'll need this. And it says, NCBVI, our mission, empowering blind individuals, promoting opportunities, and building belief in the blind. And we'd like to present you with that as well. And thank you for coming.
Yes. Thank you for this. You know, since this is red, I will use it next Friday.
Right. So, yay!
This will be our good luck charm to defeat.
Yeah. Go big red.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Governor. Thank you for being here.
Right. See you later. Thank you very much. Congratulations again, Admirals.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations.
And since our table's so little, here's your cup. If you decide you want me to set it out of your way, it's red with black handle and a black lid. I forgot to say that. Bob?
Thank you very much.
And could you just hand one to Bill, please? There you go, Bill.
Oh, Bill, I guess you didn't have one.
Oh.
I have two, but
yeah. Does it say that on both sides?
Yes, both sides has
good,
the
so
logo.
So we can be either left or right.
All right.
For you guys.
It
is.
A lot of cups are right-handed.
Are you left-handed? Brad has been here all seven years. He's got an old one, but he's probably getting close to retirement. And then you can sit wherever you like at the tables, too.
Dr. Nyland, I hope you got to meet Governor Heineman when he was here.
Governor Heineman just left.
She'll be 11.
Oh, wow. So I guess.
And I'd also.
Because I guess we were on the SRC, so.
Can the board come to order? Can the board come to order? We have other business to handle.
With your print admiralship, there is a suitable for framing Braille sheet, which has all the same words. I'll go ahead around this
okay.
time. That says the same words as your official certificate, and so that you can frame it right in there with a lot of work from Sahar and Dottie got this all put together. I really want to acknowledge their work on making this special event.
Yeah, Dottie was integral in getting Governor Heineman to come today. So
thank you very much, Dottie.
Thank you.
Now I can pull rank on the captain of the ship when I'm on
Monday. Show up with my admiral bars.
Okay, we do have a agenda that is packed full. I don't want to take anything away from this special moment for the three of you, but we do have some business we need to attend to today. And so we've already called to order, and I will prove that I will do what I say. I will delegate a lot. And so I'm going to have Barbara Lowe's read through the agenda today.
Okay. Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired public meeting, Saturday, November 17th, 2007, Lincoln, Nebraska. 9 o'clock, call to order and introductions. 9:05, announcement concerning public comments, meeting recordings, lunch arrangements, and other logistics. 9:10, minutes of the August 11th, 2007 meeting. I'll skip the times from here on out.
Okay.
Focus topic, partnership between educators and rehab service providers. Public comment, break, report from the chairman. Public comment, report from the executive director. Public comment, old business. Budget update, website update, Friends of the Commission update, NIS update, NFB Newsline update, client assistance program, CAP complaints or issues, statewide needs assessment survey, public comment, break for lunch, meet and greet with family and friends of current clients, and then new business continued after that. Review and possible revision of staff survey. Logo for NCBBI. Actually, that was old business that was continuing. Now it's new business. Sorry about that. Yeah, delegation might not be a good idea. Okay. State audit. New name of the orientation center. Questions. Report from Blind Corps. Focus topics for the next meetings, February 9th, 2008, Omaha, workings of the business office, May 10th, 2008, Lincoln, the center, August 9th and November 22nd, 2008, topics and locations to be decided. Suggestions, working with employers, 225, public comment, 235, back to the time thing. Possible executive session, then final announcements, and adjourn.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. So the next thing on the agenda is the public comments, which we allow if you were listening at various times during the meeting, and they can be on whatever we have currently been talking about or anything that you need to bring up to us. The recordings are, I think, if I know right, they are all digital now, and Hubert is handling that for us. And let's see, lunch arrangements. I'm privileged enough to brought lunch today.
Ooh, what a privilege to have to eat it.
Except that I am really getting a lot of help because I'm sitting here instead of down in the kitchen, so I am getting a lot of help. So when it's the appropriate time, they will. I don't know where we're doing lunch. In this room, Pearl?
Yes, this is the only room we can get.
Okay.
So, and incidentally, we do have on the back table, or at the far west, we have coffee, which is done and ready, and we have 2 jugs of water. And so please help yourself. Maybe somebody in the back would. We have some in a bag. There's cups and things which didn't get.
I will need more than
anybody would like in the front. I would like some coffee, please.
I'll take some coffee when you get around to it.
And Patosh, if you would also just set out all the cups, sure. Maybe Shane will help you.
Some ice water, if you had a chance, Patosh.
Oh, okay. I would take some coffee too.
Okay.
I have water.
Patosh will serve.
Continue.
Yes. And then also, I do want to say, I personally think it's hot in here, but I've been racing around, so I don't know about other folks.
It does feel a little warm.
Okay, there are 2 ceiling fans that have pull cords, which I cannot reach. So if somebody wants them on,
We'll
have to give you a boost.
Yeah. I'll stand on your
somebody
shoulders.
Somebody tall in the room if we need to have them on.
So maybe if you could put both on low, that would get things. And then at any point, we could switch that.
Sure.
Restrooms are out this door and to the right, and then they'll be where there's a kind of a jut out to the right.
Okay.
And Kathy Stevens is here. I'd like to introduce our new administrative assistant. She's still in training, but she's here today.
Thank you for helping us, Kathy.
Hey, Kathy.
And she and I are on the same page. It's her first time, and this is my first time being chair, so we're really on the same page. And I think I already neglected. I went right on to announcements, so I guess we'll finish that first. Is there anything, any other announcements?
I don't have any other. Can anyone else think of something?
Oh.
I think that's it.
Okay, so then we will go to, I think we'll have everybody introduce themselves. That's kind of what I neglected to do. So I'm expecting the board to help me when I neglect to do what needs to be done because I'm new. Anyway, okay, so I think we will go around the table. We'll start with Bill down there. Actually, I guess why don't we start with Kathy and then we'll have the whole front table.
Okay, I'm Kathy Stevens. I started the commission on September 26th, so I've been in the center training, and I'll be there till December 21st, but I'm here today to do the meeting recording, and I'm glad to be here. Nice to meet you all.
Okay. Hey, this is Bill Arrester. I'm from Lincoln. I'm the ACB representative to the commission board.
Bob Burns from Omaha, commission board member.
Nancy Oatman, and I'm the new chairman of the board.
Barbara Lowe's, and I'm the National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska designee on the board currently.
I'm Daryl Walla, and I'm the one of the commissioners, one of the members of the board in my second year of my term, and I hope somebody will be designated to give us Michigan and Ohio State updates. No, just kidding.
I'm Pearl Van Zandt, Executive Director of the Commission. I did neglect to say there are Braille and print agendas on the farthest west table by the door. Dr. Nyman?
I'm James Nyman. That's all I can say about me.
I'm Mitzi Buchanan. I'm the new computer instructor for the Commission of Life.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Eric Sandberg, I'm the new Department Resource.
Welcome, Eric.
First, thank you.
Nancy
Floral,
the Omaha District Supervisor.
Patosh Floyd, Center Director.
Next, I'm Wes Majerus from Lincoln.
Ian Burtish from Lincoln. And this is Arsene Noah.
Yes.
And I'm Shane Burrish. I'm also here working in the Lincoln District.
Thank you.
And Dottie Wilmot from Lincoln office.
And I am Ben Burns, and I'm working for Lincoln Public Schools as a community coordinator.
Carlos Cervan, Deputy Director for Voc Rehab Services, Lincoln.
Karen Anderson, I'm here as a consumer.
Jan Stokelman, I'm a new employee at the commission, work at Business Enterprise.
Hubert Paulson, work for the Lincoln District and State Office Personnel.
And one person just came in, Nancy Kaufman. I work in Lincoln District. Okay,
I think that's everybody.
Noah's introducing himself.
Yeah. Hi, Noah.
He's saying hi.
Yeah. But he said hi. I figured that was introducing himself.
Yeah. Let's see. It seems like I had an announcement to make, but it's went off the top of my head. So we will go on to the minutes. And do we have corrections or additions? I know I have a couple of corrections. Does anybody have, anybody else have corrections to the minutes?
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
We, I with apologies to Linda Mentink, who did the last transcribing of minutes, we kind of switched around the election
right.
part of the minutes.
Yeah.
It should have been that... Daryl was elected unanimously, and the abstention was actually in the chairman part of the elections.
That's correct.
And so the roll call of the vote should have been that Altman abstained and everybody else was in favor on the chairman election. So that's one correction.
Okay, thank you, Barb. Anybody else? I have one minor one, too, and this is quite minor. The SRC teleconference call that we had said, I think in the minutes it said something to the effect that I was going to send out the surveys, and in fact it was Pearl that did it, so it's really a minor thing that they were sent out, the questions were sent out, so that, because other people were very interested in that, so those were the only two corrections that I know of. Now I'm looking for a procedure. Do I need to do a roll call on this?
We have a motion to approve.
Okay, yeah, we need, you're right.
I'll second.
Thank you, Bill and Bob. We have a motion to approve as corrected, and now I need to do the roll call. Am I correct, Barbara?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, we'll start with Bill.
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Barbara?
Yes.
Daryl?
Yes.
Okay, then that would be unanimous that the minutes will be approved as corrected. Okay, now we have the focus topic, which is partnership between educators and rehabilitation providers. And I'm not sure who's...
I'll get us started. This
okay.
This is Pearl. I did mail to all of the commissioners the document, which is the result of a process that we and other partners have been going through for the past year or so to establish some protocol for better understanding and better working relationships between staff of the commission, people who represent school districts, the special ed vision teachers, the educators, the parents, the educational service units, the Nebraska City or Nebraska Center for the Education of Children Who Are Blind and Visually Impaired at Nebraska City, and consumers. And so it really has been an excellent process, and we've come up with a kind of a finalized, fairly final draft of the guide. It's called Opening Doors, a Transition Guide, and has recommended practices protocol for all of the age groups from 0 to
out of school and into adulthood. We would be glad to answer questions about that or discuss that if you like. We've also invited two people. Diane Dittmers is a teacher, as she introduced herself, and Karen Anderson is a student. This is your first year in college, right, Karen? I think. So she's been in the Nebraska school system for a year or two here, and now is in college, and she agreed to come, and both of them are going to talk with us about the topic. So, Madam Chair, would you like for them to go first, or do you have some comments or questions to start with?
I don't have any questions. We did receive that brochure from you, and I would ask my board members if they have any questions that they would like to bring forth about the brochure. Well, hearing none, I think we'll go ahead and hear from our presenters, whichever would like to go first.
All right. Diane, would you get us started?
Sure.
Yes, if you wouldn't mind. I don't know where the best spot is, honestly. Okay, sure.
Do you want the mic?
Yes. Thank you. And Connie needs to set up. Okay. Great.
I'm not sure what you want to hear from me, and so at the top of my notes, I have the question I asked Pearl in the beginning is, what do you want to know? and I have only been with Lincoln Public School for 1 year now, and so I have always worked kind of as a maverick out in rural Nebraska on my own, so I maybe have a different perception, you know, than some teachers, and when Pearl asked me, I encouraged her to invite some other teachers as well, because what I can offer you is just my opinion based on my experiences. That's what I have to offer. I'll share some anecdotes from what other teachers have told me, but please know that I'm not pretending to speak for all the other teachers. I only have my own experience to speak from. And I'll be quite honest, controversy scares me. And in general, I avoid it at all costs. But I would wish that no one would misunderstand my comments today, but you know, you risk that when you say anything. So I'm not a decisive speak from the floor kind of person. So if you give me a couple hours, then I'll mull things over and then I'll give you a really good answer. So if you have questions today and you don't get a good answer from me, Pearl has my contact information, and you're certainly welcome to call me later.
And Diane, may mm-hmm. I mention, we did invite another teacher who was intending to come, and then just very recently found out one of her students was going up to the school to get a guide dog, and
Mommy.
She was going with them. So.
Mommy.
We tried, and then it was really too late notice. We tried one other person, and they couldn't, so.
Yeah, so you're stuck with me.
Yeah, it was
well,
very happy to have Diane.
Please don't let us intimidate
oh,
you.
No.
Okay. I mean, we're that's basically what we want to learn. We want to know, you know, the kinds of things that happen between the teachers at the schools and our facility so that we can improve it as much as we can and understand better the problems and whatever else you'd like to share with us.
Okay. Well, I wrote down some notes, so I'm just going to read through my notes so I don't forget anything. Okay. But then I'd like to leave lots of room for you all to ask what you're most interested in or what you hear.
Okay.
That.
Okay.
I also am an incurable introvert, and I'd much prefer to just stay in the classroom with my students and then go home to my sweet husband at the end of the day, you know. But I also have strong opinions, and I think there are better ways that we can work together where everyone will benefit, especially the students, from a partnership. if there's anything that I've learned from the protocol process that Pearl's been talking about, was that we all do the best we can with the experience that we have. I mean, that's what we have to base our opinions on. That's what we have to go from. And quite frankly, we've all had really different experiences. When you look at the experience of the people in this room compared to the experience of most visually impaired teachers, it's just a vast, great difference in experience. And I think that's where the difference of opinions come from. Let's see. Let me make sure I don't forget anything here. Now, working with LPS, I'm real aware of that difference of opinion that exists between teachers. I mean, I was aware of it before, but now I'm really aware of it. But I still firmly believe that everyone's working and doing the best they can from the experience base that they have. And you'll hear me say that over and over. I'll share a few thoughts, but I want you to know that I'm speaking, if I speak with specifics, I want you to hear the general idea of what I'm saying. Teachers don't know who you are. That's the first thing I wanted to tell you. In most teachers, I'll exaggerate a little bit here just so to make it easier, but most teachers don't know who the commission is. Really, with the protocol, I was aware people were sitting beside me, a teacher who hadn't been in the system very long, and she said, "I didn't know the commission could do that." You know, and that kind of thing I heard often. But with the protocol, I think there's a perfect opportunity to provide quality information about who you are and what you'd like to be doing with the students in the public school and really define that better. And through that protocol system, there's a perfect avenue to do that too, because we're going to be choosing who that information goes to and how it will be disseminated. Teachers also don't know why you're so fanatical about teaching Braille. I mean, everybody thinks Braille's a good thing, but teachers really honestly don't have that big picture. And I mean some teachers. I'm trying not to generalize here too much. They don't understand that students will be, they do understand that students will be better readers if they start early. Everyone knows that. But what they don't have the experience of is teaching someone who's 24 who now needs Braille in the job situation and who can't read to their children. I mean, I think most teachers who teach third graders don't have that long-range perspective. Teachers don't necessarily understand why you're proponents of sleep shade trainings. I was sitting beside another visually impaired teacher, and we were visiting with a mom who had a little bit of experience with the commission. But what the mom said was, "Why do they always make people wear sleep shades?" You know, and the other teacher beside me, who has been in the field a long time, said, "I don't know. I think it's because they always just want to equalize things." You know, and I think, oh, that's such a small piece of what that sleep shade training is. But she was quite sincere in saying, "The only thing I can figure out is they just want to make everyone equal." You know, I was surprised at that. I think teachers don't understand why you use the word blind to refer to low vision students. They don't understand that philosophical thing. Teachers don't necessarily understand or don't agree with the method of cane travel you use or your choice of long cane. And they don't understand it because it hasn't been their experience. But I have to share with you something that recently happened. An orientation and mobility specialist said to me, "You know, I'm beginning to think that there really is something to using a long cane instead of a folding cane." And so, you know, with constant sharing of information and having the attitude that we all do have different opinions, but yet we can really benefit from learning from each other, I think that it can really happen. Teachers don't necessarily see the contrast between the skills that students have when they graduate and the skills that are possible if they have more training. They simply don't have the same end picture in mind that you might have, because they don't work with kids after high school. So that end picture isn't necessarily the same thing as what you might have. And that affects their expectations, of course, and those expectations, that's what determines student performance. So that's what you get in the end. Teachers really need to have a good picture of what happens after high school, and I think that would help too. On the other hand, another thing I see is that sometimes, and please don't take this personally, these are just things that I've noticed that happen sometimes in the relationship between commission and schools. And I have to say right off that when I ask the teachers at Lincoln Public School, what do you want me to share with this board? And one of the things they said that right now, especially in Lincoln, they feel like they can call Amy anytime they want. They feel like Amy and Shane are, you know, are, you can really communicate with them. And so I wanted to say that right off. Sometimes the commission staff doesn't necessarily understand the public school environment as well as they could. A commission staff person might not understand the IEP process, and it's really tricky process. It's different in every school, and there's lots of pressure on teachers to get it right because it's a legal document. There's lots of school requirements, and there's just lots of pressure on a teacher. So in a meeting, if someone questions what's going on, that's not necessarily the best place to do that, because at that moment, that teacher has lots of pressure on her to get it right by the signing of that IEP. The commission staff person may not have had time to get enough information or understand the whole picture about a student, especially multi-handicapped kids. So if a comment is made, for example, about Braille reading, without knowledge of what other things have been tried in that, it kind of sets it up for misunderstandings between people. So I think previous, having lots of information before you ever go to a meeting would be helpful. And I hate this. I always want things done now, right now, tomorrow, for the student. But I think that the best thing that we can do sometimes is to be patient and just share a little information, share a little more, and that will almost be better for the student in the long run. I can say more about that later. Sometimes commission person may not understand the level of responsibility or ownership that a visually impaired teacher feels with the students on her caseload. When I work with a student, everything, this is just my personal perspective too, so it may not be just like other teachers, but when I work with a student, I really, really need for that classroom teacher to trust me. And I really need for the parent to trust me, because if they don't trust what I'm asking them to do things that are uncomfortable, like things that they're not used to doing at all. And so it's that trust between the teacher and myself, and the trust between the parent and myself, is really important. And so as a commission staff person, if there's a different opinion that they share, I think that we can all learn from that, as long as the commission person will also talk with the teacher so that there's clear communication and it doesn't feel like there's one opinion here and one opinion here that's opposing. It feels like we're all dialoguing about the different options. I'll give you another example of that later. Well, no, I'm going to tell you now. This was some time ago, and the staff person is not around anymore, and you know, it's a long time past. But the one negative experience I have had working as a teacher of the visually impaired with a commission person happened with a little girl who had not had a teacher with her at all, and she was maybe 4 years old. And so someone from the commission had filled in that gap, which is great, had done that. And then when I came on staff, there was some dialogue, but, you know, I looked at the student and figured out what I thought would be appropriate, what direction we needed to go, and I started that process, and then the person from the commission talked with the parents and said she was going to watch everything, make sure it went okay, you know, and that was not helpful for that parent to trust what I was doing. The staff person went to school and said, I knew things would go downhill when I left. You know, well, that was not helpful for the teachers to trust me. So, of course, I called her and I said, can we talk? You know, and her way of dealing with it was to just back off, say, I can tell I shouldn't be here. But what I really wanted to do is talk with her and tell her why I was doing what I was doing with the student, and try to feed. We could have worked together just fine. You know, I was disappointed that she just took off. But that's the only negative experience I've ever had. And then I'll share another experience. Can I talk about you, Shane? Is that okay? No, this is a positive experience. I had a student come, when I was teaching Beatrice, I had a student come to Beatrice in sixth grade, and she had basically very, very few blindness, good blindness skills to accomplish anything in the classroom, really. And right away at the beginning, when she was there early, Shane came, and I wanted a role model for her because she didn't really know what she was looking at. Anyway, it was a long process. Shane was in there, and then Amy started coming after that. So by the time she graduated in 12th grade, she really knew Shane and Amy. That relationship was firmly established. So when she's transitioned into college, there was no problem with her understanding what the commission expected or understanding what she could do as a college student, because she'd already had a lot of time to share those things with Shane and Amy and other people too. And so that's kind of my example of how I think the commission, it should be seamless is the word everyone uses, so that when that student transitions out of high school, there's a relationship already built. And I think when you wait until kids are 16 years old, you don't necessarily have time to build a relationship. You can. I mean, not that it doesn't happen. But I think it's an ongoing thing. And I wish everyone could have been at those protocol meetings, because I think we all learned a lot about each other. And I think the attitude that transition has to begin earlier is more and more accepted all the time now through all kinds of agencies and through the school especially. Did you want to say anything more about that, Shane? Your invitation.
Not really. I mean, I agree with you, Diane. I think that the duration of time was really important and things. But I also, you know, commend you in the process too, because you allowed me enough latitude in some areas, like teaching cane travel to your student Beatrice, where a lot of other folks might not have done that, because you had me as the primary provider there. And so I really appreciate your openness toward the commission and the kinds of services that we could do too.
And that brings me to one of my last points, is that I really believe that the basis of partnering in our endeavor together is respectful relationship between persons. Because just yesterday, I called two people at the commission, and I wouldn't have called them if I didn't already know them, didn't already know that if I was asking a silly question, they wouldn't make fun of me. You know, if I didn't already know that they had knowledge that would help me out. And so I think at the basis of everything is building those personal relationships between people. Whenever I talk to other teachers, the bottom line, I think, is that they don't really know the commission. They don't know what the commission can do. They don't know people there. And so it's very intimidating. They're not going to call. You know, they're not going to partner very well. I think it's real important to have consistent staff, which it sounds like you've been doing, consistent staff that works with the public school so that you don't have different people learning all those IEP issues and that sort of thing, so that it's a dependable person when you call. You're going to get someone that's already had some experience in the school system. I think it's really would be helpful to find a way to intentionally share your experience and expertise in a way that is not trying to convince someone to change their opinion. I think that sometimes people feel like the commission is coming in and trying to push their opinion on a student or on a teacher. And I think there's ways to do that, and building that relationship and going a little slower, that if people could feel like, okay, this is my opinion, that's your opinion, you know, let's see, can we work both with this student? I think it makes sense to have a student that perhaps works on a different skill with commission people outside of school and works on it in school. The one thing I'll get off track here. I think that we're not going to agree on how to teach Braille. We're not going to agree on sleep shade training. We're not going to agree on some cane travel issues. Right now, those are the three big ones that people have different opinions on, and I think we have to understand we can learn from each other, but we're not necessarily going to change each other's opinions just like that. And I think it's vital that no action is taken on the part of a commission person that makes that teacher, even though they have a little different opinion than you, that makes them feel like you're going behind their back or doing something that makes their job harder. One of the Lincoln teachers told me an example of a person in the commission worked with a student on slate and stylus, and it was their opinion that working on that slate and stylus made their job a lot harder, because then when the student came to class, he tended to turn the letters around then, and they believed that was because of the slate and stylus training going on. But I think the problem there was lack of communication. It's not that it was necessarily bad to be teaching a slate and stylus or anything, but the teacher felt like that was making her job a lot harder. But then there was no dialogue there, which that would have been helpful. Let's see. Oh, and remember that questioning methods and procedures is almost never appropriate during a meeting. Those things need to be done before, after, in almost a personal setting. I think that we have lots of problems because people confront each other in a meeting where there's lots of other staff people and there's all that pressure to get things correct in a meeting. And also, I can't help but say that I think history has a big factor. I really believe that thing that if you tell a child one negative thing, it takes 12 positive responses after that to get over the negative thing that you told them. And I think history in this situation is a little bit like that. Some of the things that the Lincoln Public School teachers told me were things that happened 10 years ago. And since that time, they have not called someone from the commission. So I think we have to build up those positive experiences. Some of the other things they said was, tell them that it's important to remember that one size doesn't fit all, that there's all kinds of different ways to do things. They said they don't understand why they're so pushy about sleep shades. There's confusion about, oh, here's another big one they said. There's confusion about who is the commission and who is NFB. And I think it's real important to make that clear. For example, a couple years ago maybe, some staff from the commission was at the Nebraska City Conference. And at that time, many, many teachers understood that the people there were pushing NFB philosophy, and they didn't look at it as commission staff. They looked at it as NFB philosophy people. So I think it's, Pearl straightened me out. I mean, I needed some straightening out on that point when she said, no, that's commission philosophy, that's not NFB. But I think that's really muddy, and I think that's real muddy for everybody.
I'm Diana.
Yeah.
If I might interject.
Sure.
There is a time, though, that they might be referring to where the NFB did a workshop at the I believe it was their spring conference.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Of the teachers of visually impaired. So in that case, you know, some of us do work at the commission and we're presenters on that agenda, but we said right up front that we were representing the NFB during that conference. So
you said it several times, and
we took vacation time from you know, our jobs here at the commission to do that, and so on and so forth.
And also at that same meeting, there were national speakers from both the NFB and the ACB. So it actually was a consumer event. I mean, it was a Nebraska Center event, but it was to present consumer organizations. And I remember that I was interested in attending and decided specifically not to try to make it less a, because it really wasn't the commission speaking there. But Shane's right, some of the speakers were our staff. Mm-hmm. It can be confusing.
Yeah, I think it is very confusing. Just a couple other things, and please don't shoot the messenger. Please know that just because someone knows how to read Braille does not make them a teacher, or just because someone knows how to travel does not make them a good teacher. And I think we all would agree with that. But that has been an issue. Please understand that the school does assessment-based teaching. So whenever we're teaching something, it's based on an assessment. And I think that's not really true. I think that's what we say, but as public school teachers, we don't always get there. And I also wanted you to know that most teachers are not negative about the commission. Most teachers don't know a thing about the commission. And I think that's the overriding thing. What they've heard is some of the historical issues. What they've heard is a few things around the edges of people that are a bit negative, so they just hear comments. But in general, I had a student teacher last year. She didn't know. She really didn't know what the commission could do, didn't do. And the other thing is, the biggest, and I also think the other thing is that we don't all have the same picture of what that student needs to look like at the end of the day, at graduation. We're not on the same picture of that. Those are the two things that I think is the overriding thing. So those are my notes. So I'm glad to have questions, Nancy.
Diane, I guess one of my questions
I'm sorry, Nancy, but we can only allow public comments and questions during public comments, and we like to give the board members first crack at Diane, so to speak. I don't mean that at you know, we started doing this public comment thing, and we really, you're a very good friend of mine, and I hate to admit to you, but, you know, I have to stick with the rules that are already established unless the board decides to change them. So, commissioners, do you have questions for Diane?
Daryl Walla does.
Okay.
First of all, a general comment. I used to feel, you know, why don't these teachers fall in line and do all this? But as a, you know, special ed teacher, I don't have any blind students, but, you know, when you have parents emailing you that they're going to call an attorney, and, you know, we're under a lot more pressure because of the IEP, where a student can, you know, a parent can, you know, take people to court and different things. And most of the cases, you know, most of these things never reach court, but there's this feeling, you know.
Right.
The question I had also is, with No Child Left Behind, do you feel pressure that the academics must come first and some of this other stuff maybe has to take a back burner because, you know, we have to keep raising test scores and 100% of the students have to be tested and those things?
Yeah, that was a big sigh for me because
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
The biggest enemy that we have is time in the school. You know, teachers of the visually impaired now have a systemized list that's called Expanded Core Curriculum. Mm-hmm. And everyone's aware that visually impaired kids need everything on that Expanded Core Curriculum. And that's in addition to regular academics. But you're right, there's lots of pressure to make sure that first kids get the academic piece. And actually that leads me to another thought that I had about one of the goals that I envision the commission doing is taking that expanded core curriculum and doing those pieces outside of school. You know, I don't even know if that's possible, and I'm not sure how you define your role. I'll be interested to see what you write up for the protocol, actually, just, you know, to see what do you see as your role. But I see that as something that would be really helpful to the school system.
I'm new to this commission too, so I mean, to the board. Can commissioners, or can office, or can staff put in different hours? Let's say they need to work on cane travel. Can they come at 6 o'clock in the evening, or are you pretty much stuck to?
We're stuck to a 40-hour week, but it can be any hours of the day. The supervisor works with the individual staff person to adjust their schedule.
So some room for thinking outside the box.
Oh, definitely.
What is your exact job at the Lincoln Public Schools?
That's a big question. teachers of the visually impaired, I see it as my responsibility to minimize the effect of the vision loss so that the student can get as full an academic program and as full of a program to prepare them for graduation as possible. So I make sure that the students get the alternative skills they need to know so they can take in the classroom work. And I also work with parents, and I spend lots of time working with teachers, you know, just telling them, okay, when you point your finger and say this, that student in your classroom is not going to know what you need. I mean, I work with teachers probably a third of the time I spend working with teachers.
Are you the only vision teacher?
No, there's 7, 8. They're not all full-time, but there's, I think, 7 visually impaired teachers in Lincoln Public School.
Is there like a head person?
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Yes.
You, that's not you?
No, that's not me. I'm at the bottom of the heap because I'm new this year. So there is a head visually impaired teacher, and then above her is a staff person that's in the administrative part of the special ed department in Lincoln Public School.
And so do each of you get assigned specific
a caseload.
Students? Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's each right. one, you don't share responsibilities for the overall group. Each one's got their own caseload.
Right.
And then as far as, presumably, the Lincoln Public Schools then hires people based on their skill set. And so like you specifically, do you come in and take kids out of class to do, I mean, do you do cane travel and
no, because
braille training?
In Lincoln Public School, they have orientation mobility specialists, and only the certified orientation mobility specialists can do cane travel. But yes, I either, it depends on the situation. If the student is in the classroom, sometimes I teach them the skill, like I pull them out for a month or so until they know how to do the skill. And then the goal is to keep them in the classroom and have them being as independent as possible. So sometimes I pull out to do skill training, but lots of times I teach them the skill right within the classroom as everybody's doing it. It just depends. And then there's multi-handicapped kids that need a whole different set of issues. Does that answer your question?
So you would teach them Braille?
Yes, definitely. It's my favorite thing.
And then, like, the computer, the JAWS and those
right.
kinds of things, that,
that's
you
our
too.
Responsibility. It's a huge job. It's a huge job.
Do the kids, do they have access to... you know, JAWS at home then?
No, they don't. The school, I just learned that this week. I'm learning all kinds of things. But in Lincoln Public School, I worked for 27 years in Beatrice and in Marysville, Kansas, and in that area. And I think that in lots of rural school districts, the rules can be bent a little bit more. You know, so if you buy JAWS and you have 5 keys to put on, 1 key is put on at home. And that sort of thing happens. That does not happen in Lincoln Public School. I just learned that this week. But that is something that's really important, especially for a student I have right now. Wow, he really needs it at home, too.
So like a note-taking device.
Yep.
They could take that home.
Right. If it's owned sometimes. By Lincoln Public School, the way I understand, they can take it home as long as they use it just for academics. I have some students that have laptops that take them home, and they definitely don't use them just for academics. But, you know, you have to learn how to use the Internet, too. And when you're playing around, you can learn a ton. So we just don't say anything. But
I like your approach. And I like trusting and being part of a team. I have been around for a long time in a lot of different capacities, one of which has been to be an informal mentor. And I've worked with the school system in that way. And there have been times, I don't like controversy either. On the other hand, I think there are times when some of these issues, like the one that just got brought up about the JAWS, and about you know, when you're working with someone and there's a whole line of Braille with no spaces that's supposed to be, of course, words and things like that, where you really, I mean, a person, I anyway, need to talk with people about that, and I have done it in the way that you talked about, you know, talking with the teacher privately, talking outside of meetings. But where a person runs into trouble And I guess I call it good trouble, because I think sometimes we really do need to do that, is when, you know, as a mentor, and I'm working with the parents and the teacher and the student, and there are situations like there was a program for PowerPoint and stuff like that that I thought it was a good idea for the student to have. And I talked with the teacher, I talked with the everybody under the sun, and, you know, they're trying to tell me all the reasons why that just isn't a good idea. And so then you have the situation, so what do you do? And so what they suggested ultimately was that I bring the CD to an IEP meeting and then present it to the person they had designated as the put things on the computer person, and then it could happen that way because everybody there would know, okay, this is happening, here it is, all of that. So I did that. I mean, I do believe that we need to do things that people, you know, will relate to have it, you know, I'm an above board person. But one of the things that was really a concern to me was that what happens sometimes is that because they do have those rules about you can't put this on the computer and you can't put that, what the students end up learning is how to try to beat that deal, how to put something on there or get at something and then try to delete it out of a history or out of everywhere else before anybody notices. I don't think that's a good lesson. I think that, you know, that some of those things need to be changed, and I don't know exactly how to go about changing them, but they need to be. And we need to dialogue or however many people need to be talking about it. We need to not pretend. That's what we need to not do. And we do need to try to make these differences happen with whoever we need to work with. I've gone as a consumer, as an observer to the Special Education Advisory Council meetings. I've met with people in the Department of Education. I believe strongly in educating blind children. And I want to do it in a way that people trust. I'm also on the stakeholders thing for the Nebraska Center for the Education of Children Who Are Blind or Visually Impaired. I was on the planning team for that. And just this last September, I was at a meeting talking about a program for Braille that, you know, allegedly people hadn't heard of, but it's been out there for 20-some years. And I brought it, you know, specifically to their attention before. So I did that again. You know, I said, okay, so send us the contact thing or whatever. So I did that again, and I will do it over and over if that's what I need to do. But the frustrating thing is that kids are getting, you know, lost in the shuffle or whatever, or, you know, being, you know, in these catch-22s over and over again that are really difficult to deal with. And I, you know, like I said, I appreciate what you do and who you are, and I think it's important that we continue to work together and that we do recognize that we do bring different experiences. There is a time, though, when we do really, you know, I don't know how we go beyond the talking to the you know, when a parent is saying to me as a consumer or whatever, you know, please do something, and, you know, they ask me to do it or whatever, and I try to do my best, and, you know, then I think there is all of that that we do need to recognize.
I hear you. I don't know about you, Pearl, but I'm really hopeful with the protocol process that there's a whole batch of new teachers that have been coming through that program at UNL that really are new to the system. They don't know much about what the commission can do. They don't really know much about how the philosophy here is different. I mean, basically, that's something people don't know at all. How is the philosophy here different than the philosophy you get in school? And, you know, I feel a bit like a renegade because there's, you know, I do have a different philosophy, and I think that that came from my training. So, go ahead.
I would like to jump in, if I may. I'd like to make sure we allow time for Karen Anderson to speak to us. We could definitely talk with Diane all day, so if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, all right. Let's,
thank you.
Let's move on and let Karen tell us things. No, we want to hear from you, Karen.
Absolutely.
Okay. Karen, you're welcome to come to the front. Do you want to just stand there? It's I guess it's kind of tight to switch. Hubert has a microphone for you. And
where would you like me?
It's up to you.
Let's see.
Get down. There you go.
Do you want to sit or stand?
It doesn't matter.
All right. if you would like to just stand there.
Sure.
And if you want to sit, I can scoot over.
Oh, I'm fine, Nancy.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so early. I applaud you all for being here. I'm impressed at the number of interested parties we have. As someone said, I can't remember who introduced me at first, I graduated in May from Burke High School, which was one of the 7 Omaha public high schools, and I was first introduced to the commission formally in 2006 when I attended the wages program, and that following school year I attended both Winterfest programs, but before that I really hadn't been involved in the commission. My vision teacher hadn't discouraged it, but she certainly hadn't encouraged it either. I was involved in programs with OPS, getting to know other students, but nothing commission.
Excuse me, Karen. Mm-hmm. You're juggling your notes, your mic. If you would like to set your notes, there's a table here with room for you to use sort of as a podium. That might be a little more workable. And I can set the microphone just in front of you, and that will do the job.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
But I really hadn't been exposed to the commission. They'd been at my IEPs, of course, because that's standard procedure, I assume. And it wasn't that I was discouraged from participating so much as my vision teacher said, you can if you want, but we don't really see it as being beneficial. Like I said, when I got involved, my vision teacher was incredibly supportive. She always made sure I could attend things such as Winterfest. She encouraged me to get out and meet other commission clients, to get as involved in the commission as possible, because she understood that this was something that was going to help me in the long run. And Diane talked about the different philosophies between NCBVI and vision teachers, and this is definitely, definitely true. I grew up using a folding cane, and many of my peers didn't learn Braille, and I just assumed this was how it was done. And when I was introduced to the commission, my vision teacher and I actually sat down and had a talk about philosophy. And my counselor and I have done the same, although admittedly not quite as formally. But I don't feel like either of them ever made me choose. They were always most interested in what was going to be best for me. I still use my folding cane because that's my personal choice. And I think that's a really good example of how the commission and teachers should work together. My commission counselor and my vision teacher both worked together on my college search. They both helped me get information. My commission counselor took me to a couple of campus visits. My vision teacher took me to campus visits when my counselor wasn't available. Both of them helped me procure scholarships for, you know, to help with schooling. Each of them knew about different things and made sure that I was aware.
I don't think that I could have made as seamless a transition from high school to college without either of them. And I'm one of the fortunate ones because they did work together, and they have continued to work together even after I have come into college. My vision teacher still wants to know how I'm doing. My commission counselor checks up and talks to me. I'm incredibly fortunate, but I know students who haven't been as lucky, and I think that's part of why we're here, and I think that's something we definitely need to change. And I'm clearly not as organized as Diane, so anyone commission board with questions?
I do have a question. You know, I know I work for OPS, so I know your staff. I know Donna Holtman, who's the supervisor. Mm-hmm. They do a pretty good job. But if you could tell them one thing, if you had Donna here right now, what would you tell them as far as what could they do differently? What would be beneficial to them to go to that next step? Because I know we talk about philosophy and things. What would you tell them in a nice way? What would be your suggestions?
Gosh, there's a lot that could and should be done differently, I think.
Well, that's what we want to hear. Just if you could summarize.
The independence. Uh-huh. Things like, until my senior year of high school, I never had to order any of my own books, ever.
Really?
And then my senior year of high school, all I had to do was call RFB&D and say, hey, I need this book. And then all of a sudden I got into college and I was like, oh, hi. You mean you don't give them to me? Darn it.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you being honest. If you could share those, that's great.
And, you know, that's only one, it's one example, but there are other things. You know, cane travel. I had an excellent cane travel teacher. I would never mm-hmm. knock my experiences. It was my favorite class. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't want a class where they can go shopping? Come on, you guys. But I wasn't expected to go on my own. Sighted guide was the norm. I wasn't pushed as far as maybe I should be, and I guess ultimately that's what it would come down to, is push your students a little bit more. Give them that extra you can. Make them walk alone on a, you know, in the mall. Make them follow you. Don't go sighted guide all the time. Make your student read out loud. Make your student cook. Something to make them feel more like their peers.
Karen, this is Bob. But, you know, you've gotten a little older now and, you know, can look back a little bit. You know, it'll be even more so as you continue to get older. But, you know, things like, you know, if you give a kid a choice, they're not going to choose what's best for their long range. They're going to take the easy route oftentimes. And if the vision teachers, oh, you know, math, oh gosh, it's so hard. I mean, you know, we have this, you know, lesser path you can take, and you know, I mean, a lot of kids sighted or any kid, you know, yeah, give me that easy route.
Yeah.
You know, it can you see examples back when, you know, they it's being a kid. I mean, being
absolutely
a human, really, you take the easy route. Can you think back now and give us examples of, you know, when you shouldn't have? I mean, sighted kids don't get the option of, now, you know, if you don't want to write, writing's hard. I mean, with a pencil, you know, you'll learn with a keyboard. It's not necessary that you learn to write. You know, that people think that's crazy talk. But, you know, slate and stylist, you know, the person might say, well, you know, you don't need to learn slate and stylist. But do you have any, you know, thoughts now looking back of times when it just, you know, you should have been required to do things, but were given, you know, easy routes or options that shouldn't have been allowed, shouldn't even have been an option.
Absolutely. I didn't learn slate and stylus until I was in fourth grade. And I'm also fortunate, I should have mentioned this before, I suppose. My mother was also blind. And I learned slate and stylus because I saw mommy using slate and stylus and I thought it was cool. Mm-hmm. And we had to fight with my vision teacher to get me to learn slate and stylus. She did not want to teach it because she said it was hard, I'd never use it. I take notes with slate and stylus every day in class because I want to, because it works for me. It is, I think, one method of our paper and pencil. So is the Braille writer, and that was the first thing I learned on. But now I talk to young kids who say, I don't know Braille. I'm not learning to write in Braille. I can read it, but I type. Because that way the teacher, the vision teacher, doesn't have to transcribe the work. And believe me, I transcribed my own math before. It takes hours to transcribe. But there's another example of it's the easy way. For who? For both the teacher and the student. And you could get into a whole nother issue here of sometimes teachers doing what's easy for them. I definitely had that. Can anyone go back and tell my vision teacher I said that?
No, we just want you to, this openness is
right.
Is good.
Could I jump in with a question?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could talk about what commission staff could do differently to make things work more effectively.
I think it goes back to communication. Talk not only to the vision teachers more, because, like Diane said, they don't understand why you guys have the philosophy that you do. Talk to the student and explain whether they're 16 and coming into the commission program like I was, or whether they're 6. You can explain certain things to any age group. And talk to the parents, too, because the parents are ultimately the ones who are going to shape what kind of person the kid is going to grow up to be. You know, you can talk to a teacher and you can talk to a kid, and of course the kid has their own ideas of what they want and the teacher has their own ideas, but when it all comes down to it, the kid's going to follow what the parents want in general. And if the parents don't understand why you're doing what you're doing, you're never going to get anywhere.
Diane, if I had a question back to you. You mentioned a lot of the teachers. Are you talking about the general teachers? You're talking about the vision teachers?
No, I'm talking about the teachers of Disneyland. And nationally now, they kind of have a title called TVIs. So that's what I'm talking about specifically, is the teachers of the Disneyland.
They don't know about the commission.
They don't understand. Right. They don't know a lot about the commission.
And this is, you know, maybe beyond the scope of this, but, you know, the whole thing about the No Children Left Behind, I mean, we've created, you know, we want to get away from each school district having their own standards. I mean, it's one thing if people in Western Nebraska or wherever have a different technique of teaching Braille, but the bottom line is the kid learns Braille. And being able to read and write Braille is the goal, and if there's different ways of teaching it, then fine, different schools can do that. But is there a, you know, this isn't a Nebraska Commission of the Blind and Visual Impaired, not, I mean, you know, this, and then there's a Nebraska Department of Education, but is there a agreed upon standard for what blind, visually impaired students should be able to do when they graduate from high school? Or is that hadn't been determined yet? There's a school by school district.
There are lots of checklists and that sort of thing. But as far as I know, maybe I don't know, it's a real loosey-goosey kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, because the students are so individualized, some also are mentally handicapped, some also have other issues, there really isn't a standard of this is what students need by the time they graduate. I think the reason there isn't is because it's such an individualized thing.
Yeah, it's individualized, but everybody needs to know how to read and write. And, you know, there's some, you know, that some of those things can be,
right.
You know, everybody's an individual, and that's obviously true, but, you know, some of that can be a cop-out for, you know, to do what you want to do anyway. I mean, and so who would, I mean, is it the commission, Department of Education? I mean, who would establish a, you know, there's competency tests now that kids have to take to graduate from high school. I mean, who would establish benchmarks for what, you know, blind, visually impaired students need to know to, you know, move through the grades? I mean, who would set such a standard?
Or academic students in the regular classroom.
Yeah.
They have to pass the same tests everybody else does.
Right.
But what happens a lot is there's testing accommodations that happens there. So you can say on a child's IEP, testing can be done this way, but the student can be read to the student. Or, you know, so each student, you can build in those accommodations. So in the end, they're not necessarily taking the test in the manner everyone else is. You know, like if you take a science test and they don't have reading skills to be able to read that test, then the test is read to them. That sort of thing happens all the time. But basically, if it's an academic student, they have to pass those graduation requirement tests, like everyone else.
But I'm talking about the pure, you know, to be able to read Braille at a competent level, there's really no requirement for that.
There is no standard, and there's so many different opinions about what's a competent level. And here's the other thing that's happening, I think, right now. And again, you're just getting my opinion. It's now colleges are so going to e-text that the opinion, because it's easier and because it's what the kids will get in college, they're saying, you know, kids really they'll never get Braille textbooks in college, so why should we worry about their speed? You know, I think that's a trend right now because colleges are going to e-text instead of Braille textbooks.
But if you have proper e-text, they can be converted into Braille,
right.
And if the student knows that and can
right.
use that, and you know, we just had another slight victory on that the other, mm-hmm. just yesterday or the day before, trying to keep the whole thing with getting textbooks into the hands of college students in a reasonable format with the Congress. You know, they almost had an amendment that took us back a bunch of steps, but we kept them from doing that. But anyway, so those things are things that we can work toward. I would like to bring us back, if we could, to the document that was sent, because I'm a time conscious person and we're way behind too. but the document, okay, and it says things that sound really good about, you know, informed choice and, you know, sharing and trust and all of those things. But the protocol stuff hasn't been written yet, as I understand it. And how is this going to be used? Whose hands will it be in, and for what purpose? I mean, I'm a partnership kind of person, but I want to know where's this going?
Okay, I'll speak to that. We've talked a lot about the need for training, we being the people involved with the protocol meetings and the ongoing transition team, training for educators, training for commission staff, training for all the entities that are indicated on the in the protocol, Department of Education, the NCEC-BVI, that training will occur about all of the information in here, what it means, how people can really work together for the best end of the students. And we haven't exactly identified how the training will be done, but it definitely is clear that this will be communicated to people, and training will be done. Carlos, or do you want to add to that at all?
I guess what Earl mentioned so far was, in general, the group is talking about, and we also want to put together a conference. In the past, I think 7 years or so ago, the Commission for the Blind and the Teachers of Visually Impaired had a conference together. So we were thinking about that to present that document or to train that. But we are looking for any opportunity we can have to train them. I'm glad Diane mentioned the program at the university. Maybe we should talk to the program there to make sure that they use that document as part of the curriculum.
And also that they include commission staff as presenters. This past mm-hmm. summer was the first time we've been able to be actually part of that. And we've tried in the past and not been able to get through the door. But this last year we did. So that was very good.
That's good. Well, I this is a fascinating subject, and I can see where it would be. We probably could talk hours and hours and but time constraints here.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Barb?
What I want to know, if for those of us who are going off of the board, even when the, you know, when this document is completed and those protocol things and that, which I was really interested in seeing how those would shape themselves, will we be able to, in some capacity or another, continue to be updated on the process and on the, you know, the materials that come
sure.
in?
Sure.
I don't see why that wouldn't be possible. You know, just remind us occasionally because, you know, how things get out of hand. But I really feel like, you know, just because you guys are leaving the board doesn't mean that your interest has gone away. So... I think that's very possible. Well, we'd like to thank Diane and Karen
absolutely.
For being here today
very
and
much.
Doing extremely well. I know the governor being here today has thrown us way off schedule, mm-hmm. but I still thought it was very important that he'd be here.
You bet.
And we want to, in that respect, I want to thank Dottie Wilmot because she was very instrumental in getting that all done for us. Now we have public comment. Does anybody? My watch died, and so I have no sense of what time it is.
It's 2:30.
10:20.
Yeah.
It's 10:20, and I might add that Hubert does a good job of when we start any agenda item, he sets the timer for whatever amount of time it's.
Okay.
So we're only actually 5 minutes past.
Oh, well, that's really
that
good.
Yeah.
I think what we'll do is we will have, because it's fresh on everybody's mind, and I know Nancy had a question, we'll do public comment, and then we will do the break, and then we might reassess as to when it'll be. I one of the things I neglected to announce was that Fatosh Floyd has graciously offered to give us some of her experiences on her Blind Corp venture into Turkey, and we're really, really interested in that, and I have it closer to the end of the schedule, but she has lots of things that she needs to tend to this afternoon, and so we're going to put her in this morning, and I think we kind of tentatively said 11:30, so
yes.
Keep me on track of that, too.
Thank
please.
You, and one other change, which I forgot to mention earlier, too, is on the agenda, we had the meet and greet with family and friends at 1 o'clock, but it's actually 1:30 when we'll break
oh,
for
okay.
that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, you know what? Why not throw the agenda out the window? No, I, you know, I'm very flexible when it comes to that because I really think all these things are important. So now we will have public comment. Anybody that has questions of Karen or Diane, please feel free to do it now.
Diane, I don't think you can answer this question here, but I guess my question was, what can we do to enhance or help teachers understand that the picture of a blind person at age 20, 50, whatever age you want to go to, should be the same as what it is for a sighted kid? What can we do to help them to better understand the long-range issue.
You're right, I can't answer that.
That's fine.
One of the things that I think makes a huge difference is just your presence as functioning blind adults, as role models. For example, when Shane came down to the actress one time, I'm telling a story on you, Shane. The secretary said to me, "Oh my gosh, you came to the desk and I was going to come get you," and he just laughed and he came to your room. You know, I mean, just in general, those kinds of people don't have experience with blindness in general. And I think that's really helpful. I do think that it's important to look at the, I don't know if I can say this, to look at the training that happens with new teachers of the visually impaired here in Nebraska. I think that there's an opportunity there if it can be figured out how to do it within the university system. I think that's a good place. Because if the teachers of the visually impaired don't know what it takes to help a kid be independent, then no one else in the school does either. I also have to say, on top of what Karen was saying about, she mentioned independence, and I have to say that, especially at the high school level, that technology makes a huge difference. For example, the difference between a kid clumsily setting up a laptop and having an auditory input, you know, the difference between that and seeing a student with a Braille note taker, the efficiency level is a whole different level. And when people see that, they think, oh, look, Braille really does make a difference. Mm-hmm. It's those examples, I think, that really will change opinions.
Diane, I don't know whether you could respond to that. When you had the advantage of a training with the adult service system,
right,
here in Nebraska, and I know that on a number of occasions, in the way back, I can talk about history, way back history.
Please don't.
We had Becky Bedora was a teacher from originally South Dakota, I think she was, and she spent a summer before she went into teaching and then later worked for us there, but I was just wondering to what extent you think that the advantages you've had of exposure at both ends of the scale, as it were, what difference that made to you, and what difference you think it might make to others, not necessarily to have the full-time employment over a period of years, but even a summer session or even a six-week session in intensive training.
Mm-hmm. I have thought oftentimes that, why am I so different than the other teachers, because I do look at it differently, and I have to say that that's what I think made the difference. When I first came here, I didn't know anything. I was, 23 years old when I first came to the commission, and that was my first experience with blindness, and I think that training made a huge difference. I just talked with some people that went to Winterfest with some students, sighted interpreters actually, and they were saying, we learned so much. You know, and I do think that training, I think it would have to be done very carefully, but I think that training piece would be really valuable. And like you say, it probably can't be a very long kind of thing, but if it's done carefully enough, I think experiences, I think those could be really valuable experiences. And then what that does too is it connects people with people in the commission, so you already have a start on that relationship.
You would require credit for it, that attracts teachers' attention,
yeah.
I think, very quickly.
Yeah.
But I have a follow-up question and more directed to Dr. Van Zandt. I don't know what this protocol concerns, but I know this, that in the early years, way back then in history, if we talk about that again, and you touched on one scene where you said that you didn't have the authority under the rules to do the O&M, and Mr. Inamura does that, I suppose. But one of the parts of the philosophy that I think that was embedded in the approach of the commission, and even before it was a commission, was that any member of the staff who deals with clients can do some aspects of the critical skill of orientation and mobility. You don't have to wait until the O&M specialist shows up before you go down to the bathroom, that sort of thing. And I'm just wondering to what extent those rules, those credentials, and all the other things, which were really there at the heart of the issue we used to have with people. And I just hope that a protocol doesn't deepen that kind of a sense of, we do this, and I got the document that shows you we do this, and we've got the certificate that says we do that, and we're credentialed to do that. To what extent does that impede and affect his work? And partly to you, Pearl, and of course, partly to Diane.
So I'll go first and then see if Diane has anything to add. Certainly the potential, when you say protocol, for setting up more barriers is there. But in fact, I think this document opens up more opportunities, establishes that, yes, indeed, part of what the commission does is to teach independent living skills, of which pain travel is one, that all the blindness skills and counseling about blindness, that is what the commission is about, and that we have every, not only right, but responsibility to work with children and families with children of all ages, so that school administrators and teachers will recognize we're a bona fide entity that really should be involved with the children and not just some crazy outfit off on the out in the wings somewhere.
I was gonna say, I think one step that we can take now, I don't think that the commission, I think it's too big of a step for the commission to be like, teachers are going to just let them come in and teach in the school. But because they that orientation mobility certification thing, that is really strong. It's not something we're going to change. Maybe never, I don't know. But I think there's a difference between working in the school and working in addition to the school. And I think there's lots of leeway if you're not saying in the school, if you're saying it's a related service, it's a, an additional service. I think there's lots of room to do things there.
And that's where some of the respect issue comes in, because sometimes when problems rise to a real heated level is when, say, one of our folk are teaching the long cane at home, and the message is, and I don't know if they really are saying this or aren't, but the message is that the commission counselor is saying you should not use that cane that your teacher gives you. And then the teacher is saying you should not use that cane that the commission gives you. And then you have real, real barriers. But if you can teach from the perspective that this is the tool we use. When I work with you here at home, after school, we'll teach you how to use it. And, not necessarily being judgmental about the other. I don't know.
Can I say one more thing? I know the time.
Sure, sure.
But you asked specifically about the protocol, whether that addresses it. And I think that what the protocol does is it gives a basis for communicating.
Right.
And so that when those things, the communication happens before it comes to that issue. Also, as part of the protocol, there's a whole section that's called, what's it called?
Recommended practices.
Yes. Yes. And in that section, there is a lot of things that you can refer to as, this is how we're going to work together.
Just don't need water to use, okay?
Yeah.
I did hear Hubert try to get a question in before, and I am going to allow it.
Diane, is there any point during the formal education that you received at the university that representatives of the commission or of consumer groups are invited in to explain who they are, what their philosophies are, so that when the teachers are out in the field and have contact then with the commission members or representatives of the consumer groups respecting certain issues, that they got some forewarning of who they're talking to and what their philosophies are?
I had my training, I had my training before they ever did the university one here in Nebraska, so I was trained in Colorado.
Okay.
But from the same teachers that I had, there have been times here and there when they have heard from people, but both the student teachers that I had didn't have a very big, a very good idea of who the commission was or who the consumers are.
Thank you.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Barbara.
One of the things, you know, listening to Diane and Karen and, you know, putting the things that they're talking about together with the document and all of that, that I hope will happen is that this could be something that would lead to a university class or a part of the curriculum that all of the entities involved would recommend, that would go through whatever the channels there are that need to be gone through, that would become a priority. Because I do agree that, I mean, they both talked about communication from different and very interesting perspectives, Diane and Karen have, and I think that would be a really good outcome for this, because it does need to get into the hands and minds of the teachers, who need to know that there is, like with anything else, a plethora of of experience and information out there, so that they can become involved with folks. I mean, we remind ourselves over and over that we're a small minority, but one of the things that means is that we need to make sure that we make the best and the most of getting our information and our opportunities to interact out there.
And I have to say one more thing. But I think that if we look at pie in the sky ideas, you know, what you're talking about, Barb, makes so much sense. And if there was a class at the university, not just for teachers of the visually impaired, but I have tons of teachers all the time, they've never had a blind kid in their classroom, and they would love to take a class, you know, that was specific to that. And teachers all the time have to get continuing ed credits. And I really think there would be a real interest in having a class at the university that you could get credit for that would be specifically to this field.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Very good.
So do you know how to start it? I mean, is the ball rolling at all?
This might be something we could carry that we wouldn't need to do during this meeting, but
yeah.
I've already made some notes to follow up and see if we couldn't.
Yeah, this was very, very interesting topic, and I can see why we need to do the work. But you know, we're getting there. We're all learning, and we're going to get all these young blind people to learn too. Okay, I think we will cease public comment now, and we will go for a break of 10 minutes. So, what time do we need to be back here, Hubert?
10:45.
So then I think we probably will have room for my report and public comment and probably Pearl's maybe before we need to get to Patoche. So I think that's what we'll do. So everybody back in 10 minutes.
Okay.